That property you're considering has invisible restrictions that can derail your entire building project. Property easements homeowners discover too late give legal rights to utility companies, neighbors, government entities to use portions of your land. And you generally can't build anything permanent in those areas. In one project, a 20-foot wide easement cut through the middle of a 2-acre parcel, reducing the buildable area by like 40%. Today, I'm explaining exactly what easements are, the types you'll encounter, and how to find them before they surprise you. This is critical due diligence for any land purchase or construction project. Welcome to The Awakened Homeowner. Thinking about a new home or remodel, but feeling lost in a maze of decisions? You're in the right place. I'm William Reed, and for over 3 decades, I've coordinated the design and construction of hundreds of remodel and new home projects. I know the process can feel overwhelming, but trust me, you can do this. Here we break it all down step by step so you can feel confident, empowered, and even excited about your project. No stress, no guesswork. Just the guidance you need to bring your dream home to life. Let's dive in. All right, welcome back. This is Bill Reed, your home building coach. And if you've been following along with this Understanding Design Limitations series, and I really hope you have, we've been covering a lot of ground together. And last episode, 34, we talked about setbacks and property lines and how they create this invisible box that defines where you can build on your lot. And today we're diving into easements, which are a completely different beast. I touched on the easements in the previous episode, and after thinking through this, I thought it would be really important to dedicate an entire episode to easements because it is something that can really impact the floor area ratio and the overall allowance on your lots to build. And if setbacks define the edges of your building envelope, easements can like punch a hole right through the middle of it. So here's the thing about easements. These are kind of one of the most understood and underestimated restrictions in home building. And I've seen it happen over and over again. Homeowners fall in love with a property, they start designing their dream home, and then they discover an easement that makes their lot unbuildable. And by that point, they've invested thousands of dollars in architectural fees and months of time. The reason easements catch people off guard is you simply can't see them. And this is like when I mentioned when you're considering buying a parcel, let's say it's a 2-acre parcel or a 1-acre parcel even in a development, and you're standing at the top of the street overlooking this beautiful property, there's a pretty good chance you're seeing part of your neighbor's property that border your property that distorts the perception of the size of your property. And easements are kind of the same thing, where you're looking at this beautiful piece of property, but you do not know what's lurking underground. And overhead you can see, and then sometimes people don't even realize those could be easements as well. So, you know, a setback, you can at least visualize once you know where the property lines are, but easements, they're underground utility lines or overhead power lines, they're access routes for neighbors, and you didn't even know they existed. You can't see them. So I'm going to give you the complete education on easements today, what they are, the different types, how they affect your building plans, and most importantly, how to find them before you make any commitments. And then here's something I'm going to start doing. I've created a companion YouTube video where I walk through an actual property survey, and it's a real project, a 2-acre parcel in Northern California, and you can see exactly what a 20-foot wide easement looks like on a professional survey and how it impacts the buildable area. And what's naturally going to be occurring here is I'm going to start educating you on what survey drawings look like and what the purposes of them are and why that data is so really important. So we're going to cover kind of two things at once on the companion YouTube video for this episode 35. And I'll give you the link at the end in the show notes. I mean, you can always go to the YouTube channel, The Awakened Homeowner, and look at that latest video, which will be episode 35, and then some of the other ones I've done. This walkthrough should be incredibly valuable, so make sure you know you watch that episode. But I'm going to stick with the podcast here because I know there's a lot of people out there listening, driving, kicking back in the backyard, or skiing down the slope, whatever it is. I want to stick with it. So the previous episode, I kind of diverged and did a YouTube video presentation in the middle of it. And for those podcast listeners, that can be a little bit tough. So I'm going to try to accomplish both here with two different mediums here. So by the end of today's episode, you'll understand the different types of easements, how they affect your floor area ratio calculations in some cases that I covered in episode 33. That's how big your home can be relative to your lot size, and then exactly what questions to ask before you purchase any property. So does that sound good? Let's make it happen. What are easements and why they matter? An easement is a legal binding right you have granted to someone else or that's already been granted by the previous owners to use a specific portion of your land for a specific purpose. You own the land, but someone else has the right to use it. So think about that for a second. You own the property, you're paying the property taxes, you're responsible for it, but someone else can come onto your land and use it, and they don't need your permission every single time. And keep one really important thing in mind is you have purchased a property and the easements come with it. These easements could have been declared 100 years ago, who knows, but they will always be attached to the property, and we'll get into the legal aspect of it in a minute. This is completely different from setbacks, which we talked about in the last episode. Setbacks are like regulatory restrictions the city or county creates. So they're creating that box, that invisible box that we talked about, your building envelope, and those are the edges where you can build. Setbacks are defined by zoning ordinances. They're the rules imposed by the government. Easements, on the other hand, are contractual agreements. They're defined by recorded legal documents. They're agreements between parties that give someone the right to use your land. So if setbacks create that box where you can build, easements can punch holes right through it. And that's the way I think about it. So both can restrict where you can build, but the origins are completely different, and how you deal with them is completely different too. So why do easements exist in the first place? Well, there are a lot of reasons, and honestly, most of them make sense when you think about it. First of all, there's this practical necessity. A big common easement are utility companies. Utility companies need to get electricity, gas, water, sewer, telecommunications, and all of that infrastructure has to get to your property and to your neighbor's property. And the only way to do that is to run lines across land, and that's where utility easements come from. Second, there are legal requirements. If you've got a landlocked property, meaning it doesn't have direct access to a public road, there has to be a legal access easement across someone else's property. Otherwise, that land would be completely worthless and you couldn't even really get to it. And third, there's environmental protection. Drainage easements exist because water is going to flow downhill, whether you like it or not. And if we block that natural drainage, we're going to flood somebody else's property. Conservation easements protect agricultural land, wildlife habitats, and historical sites. And fourth, there's the public benefit, shared access roads, trails, that kind of thing. And fifth, and this is important, historical agreements. Many easements were granted decades ago, maybe even 100 years ago, and they just transfer with the property forever. And the current owner might not even know why the easement exists anymore, but it's there and it's enforceable. So the permanence factor, Which brings me to something really critical. Easements are essentially permanent, and once granted, they're almost impossible to take back. They call it run with the land, and it's a legal term, meaning they transfer automatically every time the property changes hands. You can't just decide one day, you know what, I don't think I want this easement anymore. I'm going to get rid of it. It doesn't work that way. Removing an easement requires an agreement from the easement holder, the person or entity that has the rights. And why would they give up those rights? They usually won't, unless you're paying them a lot of money or providing them with an equally good alternative location. And even then, it's expensive, time-consuming legal process. Now, that said, there are often easements on properties that date way back that were part of a bigger picture general plan that no longer is in existence. An example would be on a commercial property that I was working on in the Bay Area of Northern California. There was an old easement across the front of a commercial property, a big one, like a 40-foot wide easement, which dramatically affected the development possibilities of the property. And it comes to find out it was based off of a previous general plan that was going to install a rail system or something from a long time ago that's never going to happen. So in that case, I consulted with the city and the county, and it sounded like there might be a possibility to get that easement reduced or removed. But that's kind of a rare situation. But all that said, it is possible, but not likely. So the bottom line is, when you're evaluating a property, assume any easements you see are permanent and don't buy the property thinking, I'll just relocate that easement later. That's kind of a recipe for disaster. All right, easements can definitely affect your property value, and they reduce your usable land area, and they can limit your development potential, and they affect your floor area ratio calculations. Perhaps, and remember in episode 33, where we talked about FAR, floor area ratio, easements reduce your net site area, which means less buildable square footage. You'll want to check in your local jurisdiction to see if that is actually a fact. Some cities do that, some don't. They sometimes allow you to include the easement area in your FAR calculation. So keep that in mind. In fact, you know, depending on where the easement is located and how large it is, it can significantly impact your resale value. So if you're purchasing a property and you see that there are easements because you're a smart homeowner and you found out what easements are on your property, that can lead to a re-evaluation of your property, the value of your property, or the property that you're planning to purchase. Smart buyers research easements really carefully, and they understand that a 2-acre lot with a big easement running through the middle might only be as valuable as a 1-acre lot with no easements. So that's the big picture on what easements are and why they matter. You own the land, but someone else has legal rights to use it. They're contractual, they're permanent, and they punch holes in your building envelope. Now, let's take a look at different types of easements you'll encounter, because they're not all the same. All right, so there are 5 main types of easements you need to know about, and I'm going to walk you through each one, because understanding the type of easements helps you understand what you can do in that area. Utility easements. Utility easements are going to be the most common easement that you run into, and they're also called PUEs, or public utility easements for short, and these exist for electricity, natural gas, water, sewer, and telecommunications, and all that infrastructure I mentioned earlier. They're usually somewhere between 10 feet and 20 feet wide, and they can be located, you know, along the edges of your property, or they could run right through the middle of your lot, depending on how the utilities need to get from one place to another. So here's what you need to understand about utility easements. The utility companies have the broad access rights. They can dig, they can maintain, they can repair, all without asking your permission. You can't deny them access. If PG&E, which is the local utility company here, Pacific Gas and Electric, needs to dig up your yard at 2 a.m. to fix a gas leak, they're digging up your yard at 2 a.m. That's the reality. And here's what I tell people. The most dangerous easements are the invisible ones underground. You can see overhead power lines, and you know there's an easement there. Or did you know there was an easement there? If you have overhead power lines running along the back of your property, like you often see suburban developments with power poles right on the property lines, well, they have an easement to each side of those power poles, 5 to 10 feet to each side of those power poles, so they can access their utilities and service them. But the underground ones, the gas line that's 2 or 3 feet underground, that sewer line, you have no idea where those are unless you have a survey done and you've done your research. The second type is access easements. These provide a legal right of way to landlocked properties, properties that don't have direct access to public roads. This is really common in rural areas or in older subdivisions where the lot configurations got a little creative. The width varies. Typically, you're looking at, 12 to 20 feet for a driveway easement. They can be exclusive, meaning only one property uses them, or they could be shared, meaning multiple properties can share that access route. And here's something important. Access easements often come with maintenance responsibilities. If it's a shared driveway, there's usually an agreement about who's responsible for maintaining it, who pays for repairs, how costs get split. You want to understand all of that before you buy. And I've seen situations where homeowners share a quarter mile driveway with three other families and nobody's willing to pay to fix the potholes. It becomes this whole neighborhood dispute. So ask those questions up front. Drainage easements are a little more unique, but you will see them. These exist to manage stormwater and natural water flow. Water's going to flow downhill. So that's just physics, right? And drainage easements follow these natural drainage patterns to prevent flooding on neighborhood properties. The width varies depending on how much water we're talking about and the size of the overall watershed area. So the key restrictions with drainage easements is you can't block or direct the water flow. You can't fill in a swale. You can't build a retaining wall that redirects water onto your neighbor's property. And in many cases, you're required to maintain vegetation in drainage easements to prevent erosions. I see this a lot with properties that have natural creeks or drainage swales running through them. Beautiful properties, but you've got to respect the water flow or you're going to have problems both with the city and with your neighbors. And this is different than flood zone easements or flood zone designations. We're going to talk about that in a completely separate episode because a combination of setbacks, flood zones, easements, all are putting that squeeze on the property that I'm talking about. So if you see a beautiful creek running around across the back corner of your property or across the back of your property, or hopefully not right down the middle of your property, be aware that you're probably going to have to double and triple and quadruple the width of that swath of land because it's a flood zone. But we'll talk about that in a separate episode. We're just talking about specifically easements. Conservation easements. So these are a little different because they're usually voluntary agreements. A landowner grants a conservation easement to protect their land. Maybe it's an agricultural land. Maybe it's an environmental habitat. Maybe it's a historical property up where we're at. There's organizations that are recapturing land through conservation easements with owners to honor the Native American community here and give their land basically back to them. They don't own the land, but they're able to use the land and there will be no development on it. These restrictions are permanent and they can prevent any development at all or significantly limit what you can do. Now, there are tax benefits for landowners who grant conservation easements, which is why people do it. Well, it's the main reason why they do it, but they also do it because They don't want to see their land developed. But from a buyer's perspective, if you're looking at a property with a conservation easement, you need to understand exactly what the restrictions are. Some conservation easements allow you to build one single-family home. Others don't allow any structures at all. So read the easement agreement very carefully before you commit to buying. Prescriptive easements. Now, this is one that's interesting. It's a little unusual. These are easements created by long-term use, not by written agreement. What's that thing in marriage when it's common law? It's the same kind of thing. Here's how it works. If someone uses a portion of your land continuously for a certain period of time, and that period varies by state, usually somewhere between 5 and 20 years, they can actually acquire a legal easement through prescriptive rights. A classic example, your neighbor's been using a corner of your property as a shortcut to get to their backyard for 15 years. You've never said anything. You've never posted no trespassing signs. You've never tried to stop them. They could potentially claim a prescriptive easement. Now, this can be challenged legally if you do discover them, but the way to prevent prescriptive easements is to be vigilant about your property. Post no trespassing signs. Document any permissions you give. And if someone's using your land, address it early before it becomes a long-term pattern. So these are your five main types. Utility easements for infrastructure, access easements for landlocked properties, drainage easements for water management, conservation easements for land protection, and prescriptive easements created by use over time. And by the way, in that companion YouTube video I mentioned, I show some of these exact examples, and I show you one other one that I haven't mentioned, which is a right-of-way easement that is declared from the public road into a property, and then the setback is determined. And that can drastically reduce the size of your lot. So I didn't bring that up today because that's kind of a separate topic I want to focus on, and I'll show that to you in the YouTube video. All right, quick reminder, everybody. Everything we're talking about today and so much more is in the Awaken Homeowner book. At less than 0.1% of your project cost, it's the best investment you'll make. Grab your copy on Amazon and keep it by your side throughout your entire project. Trust me, you'll refer to it again and again. All right, so now let's talk about the practical question every homeowner asks. What can I actually build in an easement area? All right, so you've discovered there's an easement on your property. The million-dollar question is, what can you actually build there? And the short answer is not much. But let's get into the specifics, because there are some gray areas and there are a few exceptions you should know about. But the general rule is that there are no permanent structures on easements. If you can't pick it up and move it in a day, you can't put it on an easement. And that's the way I think about it. You cannot build houses. You cannot build garages. You cannot build pools, patios, decks, or retaining walls in easement areas. You cannot install septic systems, wells, or foundations. You cannot plant trees with deep root systems or permanent landscaping that would interfere with utility access. The basic principle is this: the easement holder, whether it's a utility company or a neighbor or whoever, needs to be able to access and use that area without obstruction. And if you build something permanent there, you're obstructing their rights. And here's what happens if you do build in an easement area. They can make you remove it at your expense, and they will. So here's a few gray areas that may be allowed, but you have to check with the easement holder first. Things like temporary structures, you know, maybe a removable shed that's not on a foundation. Lawn and grass and ground cover are usually fine. Shallow rooted plants, annual gardens are usually okay. Gravel driveways sometimes, if you get approval. Fencing sometimes, depending on the utility company's policies. Above ground sprinkler systems, you know, maybe. But here's the key. You always need to verify before you're installing anything. Don't assume. Get written approval from the easement holder, because even if something seems harmless, to you. If it violates the easement terms, they can make you remove it. The property that I'm going to be showing you in the companion YouTube video, I was allowed to place a driveway, a paved driveway, over a portion of the easement because it's the only way that we were able to fit everything on there. So we crossed over an easement with a paved driveway. And the utility company allowed it in this particular case. You have to think about this, that it's extremely rare that they will have to dig it all up and replace that line on your property. And if they did, it's going to be every 10 or 20, 30, you know, years. So this is why you sometimes can build certain things over top of an easement. But, you know, I have seen homeowners spend thousands of dollars on landscaping and easement areas only to have the utility company come through and rip everything out because they needed to access their lines. Now, you're all out of money and you've got a torn up yard. How about can we modify or relocate an easement? Theoretically, yes. Practically, it's really, really difficult. It requires an agreement from the easement holder, and you have to prove that an alternative location works equally well for them. The same access, the same utility routing, whatever the purpose is, usually you're paying all the costs for the relocation, and we're talking big costs, 40, 80, 100 grand. You know, plus depending on what has to be moved. And the timeline's long, too. I mean, some of these utility companies can take 6 months to a year to get things done, sometimes even longer. I think the project that I'm going to be showing you in the video companion, I actually had to have some easement work done because the utility company actually didn't put the power lines in the easement. So it didn't cost us any money. But it took a long time to get through it. It's a whole legal and engineering process. And here's the reality. Your success rate is low unless you're willing to pay all the costs and you can demonstrate that the alternative location is actually better for the easement holder. Most utility companies will just say no because it's not worth their time and hassle. So my advice, don't buy property assuming you can relocate an easement. Design around the easement that exists. Factor that into your decision about whether to buy the property in the first place. All right, well, let's get a little bit more detail here. And how do you find the easements? I've touched on this in a few episodes before and even on this one, but you need to find the easements before you commit to the property or you commit to a design. And the good news is there are several reliable sources for this information. The bad news is homeowners often skip these steps or they don't even know what to look for. And that's the whole goal here of the Awaken Homeowner mission, is to enlighten, empower, and protect you. So now that you know what you didn't know about easements, you're going to be in a much better situation. Maybe it's even just from a negotiation standpoint to buy that property or by being sure that you're designing the buildings in the right place at the first time. So let's go through a little checklist here. Title reports. So your primary source for easement information is the title report to begin with. So during your escrow disclosures, if you're buying a property, if you've already bought it, you have a title report and you get what's called a preliminary title report when you're buying a property. And this is prepared by the title company. And it lists every recorded easement, lien, everything that affects the property. So what you want to look at, I think it's called Schedule B. And that's a section that lists exceptions to coverage. And you're going to see easements listed there. Now, here's what's important. Don't just rely on the title company's summary. Request copies of the actual easement documents. So you won't see those automatically in the preliminary title report. But in the title report, you may see there's a 10-foot utility easement as recorded in book 234, page 567. You want to actually read that document from book 234, page 567, because the details matter. Now, it's really tough for us, even me, and homeowners to understand some of the jargon. I just read to you something very basic and simple. But a lot of the easements are recorded within the title report, within surveyor, you know, language that's really hard to interpret. They go through all of the different degrees and the locations and the geolocations of the easements, and it's really hard to understand. But a lot of easements do the detailed documents I was talking about do have a supplemental diagram sometimes, not all the time, where you can actually physically see a floor plan or a plot plan, sorry, of your drawing showing the easements. But the bottom line is you need to know exactly where the easements are located, how wide it is, who holds the rights, what the purpose is, and what the restrictions are. All of that's in the recorded document. And here's a key point. Title insurance doesn't protect you from easements. So easements are listed as exceptions. The title company is basically saying, we know these easements exist, and we're not insuring against them. So you can't just assume that if there's a problem with an easement, your title insurance will cover it. It probably won't. Professional survey. So we've talked extensively about surveys back in episode 14, and what, you know, with an actual land surveyor, and this is where the investment pays off. A professional survey will show you exactly where easements are located on your property. Now, what's going to naturally occur as I go through the companion video for this little mini series of easements is I'm going to be showing you a sample of a survey drawing and what the civil engineer did with that survey drawing to show all of the different setbacks and easements and slopes and whatnot. So we're going to be kind of accomplishing a couple things at the same time, but I will definitely be having a dedicated episode for survey drawings, because as you've probably figured out, if you've been listening to this podcast, I'm a big fan of getting surveys and topographic maps before doing anything, maybe even buying the property. So a professional survey will show you exactly where easements are located on the property within a plot plan, and they'll show you the slopes that are on the lot if you get a topographic survey, like I've mentioned, and that's the highest standard. It's required for commercial properties, and it's optional for residential, but it gives you everything. The survey shows easement boundaries clearly marked. It includes references to the recorded easement documents, and a good surveyor doesn't just measure your property boundaries. They research the county records. They review your title report. They look at the original subdivision plot, and they document every single easement that affects your property. You know, cost-wise, you're probably looking at, I don't know, $2,000 to $5,000 for just the survey. It's probably not two, it's probably more like five, depending on the property size and complexity. But here's the thing. This is essential before design work begins. Don't skip this step to save money, because the cost of discovering an easement later is way, way higher. Now, when you get your survey back, it's going to look similar to what I show you in that companion YouTube video I mentioned. And you'll see the property boundaries. You'll see the topographic contour lines if there's a slope. And then the easements will be marked usually with dashed lines or specific notations. So in the video walkthrough, I'll explain exactly how to read these survey notations and what they mean for your building plans. That visual education is going to be really valuable, because I'm going to show you kind of a progression of what we went through from the day we looked at the lot to the survey, to the civil engineer. So in the video walkthrough, I'll explain exactly how to read the survey notations and what they mean for your building plans. I'm going to take you through that particular project and show you the day we looked at the lot, the pictures of the lot, the survey topo document that we received, and what the civil engineer did with it, and what the architect did, and how we were constrained on a 2.5-acre parcel by the dynamics of the lot and the easements and the setbacks and the allocations for the right of way and the leach fields. And as you can see, I'm getting beyond easements here, but it's all kind of goes together. So it's kind of hard to break that apart, and it's going to be more valuable for you to see how we're able to massage this design to fit into this somewhat large parcel to what we really able to use of the parcel. So make sure you watch that you know, video after this episode, and I think it might make all this click for you. And if you haven't listened to episode 14 on land surveyors, go back and check that out too. We dive deep into what, you know, surveyors do and why their work is so valuable. That episode pairs perfectly with today's topic. Now, another way you really can try and pick up on any potential easements, especially early on when you're just walking a property, thinking about building on it, to at least alert you on what needs to be researched, is a visual inspection. So, you know, you can walk the property thoroughly and look for observable clues, because sometimes you can see easements even though they're not explicitly marked. And what I mean by that is look for utility boxes, manholes, overhead power lines, power poles, transformer boxes indicate electrical easements, and I'm going to show you that on the YouTube video. Sewer access points indicate sewer easements. You know, some worn paths might indicate easements that maybe neighbors have been using or past utility servicing has gone on. You know, and also talk to the neighbors, ask them about, you know, their property history, about who uses what access roads, especially in larger, you know, rural parcels, or, you know, maybe even medium-sized parcels. Sometimes neighbors know, in fact, a lot of times neighbors know more than you may think. The basic principle is if you see any infrastructure on the property, sometimes you'll see some stakes sticking up out of the ground. That's from previous investigation. But the basic principle is to see if there's any infrastructure on the property. There's likely an easement there. Because if there's a box sticking out of the ground, there's probably wires going to it. And the wires, how do the wires get there? Onto your property through an easement. But you still want to confirm it with actual documents. But your visual inspection gives you clues about what to look for. And then, of course, there's the old direct question method. If you're purchasing a property, you ask the seller or real estate agent directly, and I mean very specific direct questions, because it's their responsibility to disclose what they know about the property. And if they don't, then you've got recourse if something doesn't happen there. So here's a couple of questions. You know, are there any easements on this property? Has anyone else ever used portions of this property for access? Where are the utility lines located? Have any neighbors mentioned easements or access rights? Are there any recorded agreements affecting the property? That will come out in the disclosures, but the more you can learn early on, the better, before you waste a bunch of time purchasing a property. And then watch out for the red flags and the responses. If the seller is reluctant to answer, if they say, you know, vague things like, I don't think so, or I'm not sure, if there's no survey available, if they haven't reviewed their own title report, those are all the warning signs. And here's the thing, you always verify independently. Even if the seller says, oh, there are no easements, you check the title report. You get the survey, you do the research, because sellers aren't always fully informed about their own property, and sometimes they're not fully honest. All right, finally, let me talk about when you should bring in professional help, because easements can have legal and financial implications that go beyond your DIY research. Consider hiring a real estate attorney to review your title report and easement documents. You know, that can cost you $500 to $1,500. And they can spot issues you might miss. And I have to say, if you're a user of any AI technology, such as Claude, which is what I use often, you can probably upload that document to Claude and ask him, quote unquote, him, to review the title report and find any things that you should be concerned by as a homeowner, especially when it comes to easements and liens. So you could try that. I'm not going to take any responsibility for the results because I'm not an AI expert or an attorney, but gosh, it's something that's you can do in minutes and it doesn't cost you much at all. So from a professional help standpoint, there we go again with that surveyor. You need to really think about that. And, you know, if finding out if easements affect the grading, the drainage, the utilities, bring in a civil engineer to help you understand the implications. And remember, a civil engineer is not just for that purpose. Architects often consult with civil engineers or bring civil engineers onto the design team to handle the design process outside of the structures for grading and drainage and utilities and septic systems, retaining walls, all of these things that are outside the boundaries of the property. And that's what I talk about on episode 14. If you're seriously considering trying to modify or relocate an easement, you definitely need a land use attorney for that who specializes in that area. And if you're spending money on these professionals, it might be $2,000 on a survey, $500 on an attorney review, more if you need engineering help. But compare that to the alternative $50,000 mistake that is either redesigning or you overpaid for a parcel because now the value has gone way down. You know, there's a lot of different variables here that you can control and you can use even when in the negotiations of purchasing your lot, but especially help you when you go to start designing your project that you are being prudent about it. You're not having to pick up entire structures and move them over 20 feet because you didn't know something existed. So your complete checklist, I mean, review the title report. Even if you already own the property, review your title report. Order a professional survey. Research county records. Walk the property. Ask direct questions and bring in professionals when needed. And if you really are serious about your project, go to the effort of getting the survey done before you even interface or engage with an architect. Get a topographic map done. Walk into your architect's office or send them over your survey document. They'll be very pleased that you've already done some of your own due diligence on the project, and that will fast forward, that'll leapfrog your design process. So the key principle is to find the easements during escrow, not while you're digging the foundation of the house. A few thousand dollars in due diligence can save you tens of thousands in redesign costs. All right, so let's bring this all together. Property easements are legally binding rights you've granted to others, whether it's utility companies, property owners, government entities, etc., to use portions of your land. And unlike setbacks, which are zoning regulations, easements are contractual rights that are typically permanent and very difficult to modify or remove. You know, we covered five main types today. Utilities, access for landlocked properties, drainage easements, water management, conservation easements, and prescriptive easements where somebody may have been using your property for 20 years and can try to get rights to it. And you can't build permanent structures in the easement areas. And we've covered your due diligence checklist. Review the title reports. Order surveys. Research the county records. Conduct visual inspections. Ask direct questions all before you commit to the property or before you start designing. Now, here's what I want you to do next. Head over to YouTube and watch the companion video I created specifically for this episode. In that video, I walk you through an actual topographic survey of a 2.25-acre parcel in Northern California. It's actually up in the Napa Valley. And you'll see exactly what I think it's a 20, I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it's a 20-foot utility easement. And what it looks like on a professional survey. I show you how it cuts through the buildable area, how the surveyor documented it, and we calculate the real impact on the property, which in this case reduced the buildable area by a lot, by like 40%. And it wasn't just the easements that did this. It was also some of the dynamics of the sloping property, which you should also be very concerned about. So that visual demonstration makes everything we talked about today concrete and real. And you can find the video on the YouTube channel at The Awakened Homeowner, or I'll put it in the direct link in the notes for this episode. So trust me, seeing a real survey with a real easement will, I'm hoping, will make this all click for you. And even if you're a design professional or maybe an aspiring design professional, this can help you kind of connect the dots too. So everything we covered today about easements comes from section 2.311 of the Awakened Homeowner book. You know, and that section has additional details, more examples. If easements are a concern for your project, or if you want to understand all the design limitations that affect home building, this book is really your comprehensive guide. And I know that a lot of people begin thinking about a project and don't know where to start. And this is a great book to have by your side as you're even way before you even, you know, contact any design pros. That's what it's all about. And you can find it on Amazon. And of course, it represents a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what you'll invest in design or the project. So it's going to help you. There's even a free little story that I'll have a link to for The Tale of Two Homeowners that I've kind of created myself. It's a fictional story that ties all of this together into. And it's based on real life examples, but I created this story. And I want to hear from you. If you've encountered easements on your property that surprised you, are you in the process of evaluating a property right now and you've got questions about easements, send me your questions at www.reed@theawakenedhomeowner.com or find me on Instagram, you know, at The Awakened Homeowner. And if this episode helped you understand easements better, please take 30 seconds to leave, you know, a review for me on the Apple Podcast or Spotify. And your reviews genuinely help other homeowners find this information when they need it most. I read every review and really appreciate taking your time. All right, everyone. I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach. Remember, enlighten, empower, and protect. That's what we do here. And don't forget to watch that video. It'll connect all the dots for you. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks for tuning into The Awakened Homeowner. Remember, you've got the power to take control of your project from day one. If you're ready to dive deeper, grab The Awakened Homeowner book on Amazon. It's your roadmap to success. Join our community at theawakenedhomeowner.com. And download our free story, The Tale of Two Homeowners. And here's something exciting. I'm developing an app called BuildQuest that's going to revolutionize how you plan and manage your project. Visit buildquest.co to become a founding member and test drive the app when it launches. Follow us on social media and hit that subscribe button. All the links are in the show notes and bio. Got questions? I'd love to hear from you. This is Bill Reed. You got this.